This is DW News live from Berlin. Another tense standoff. The conflict between Israel and the Palestinians moves into a fifth night. Israeli war jets pound Hamas targets in Gaza. The Air Force also strikes underground bunkers. Launch pad, it says, for rocket attacks on Israel. And on the ground, deadly clashes between militants and Israeli security forces. And Mideast unrest sparks anti-Israel demonstrations in cities around the world. Vandalism here in Germany prompts an official warning that anti-Semitic protests won't be tolerated. And mass protests give way to elections. Voters in Chile go to the polls this weekend. And we meet a young would-be lawmaker who wants to help shape a whole new constitution. I'm Leila Harak. Thank you for joining us. The war between Israel and Palestinian militants is lighting up the sky for the fifth night running. Fighting and unrest have now spread throughout both Israel and the Palestinian territories. Israeli jets have again began pounding Gaza, and Hamas militants have been firing rockets into Israel. Some 130 people have died, most of them in Gaza. The occupied West Bank has seen the first major clashes since the conflict erupted. On the streets, Arab and Jewish Israelis have repeatedly attacked one another. We begin now with dramatic scenes from Gaza.
In an instant, a six-story building is reduced to rubble. All throughout the day and into the night, explosions reverberated through Gaza City as Israel intensified its onslaught against Hamas. As the conflict intensifies hour by hour, Gazans are fleeing their homes with whatever they can carry. Some have come to this school run by the UN in search of a safe place. We were planning to leave during the night, but drones and jets kept bombing us. At dawn, we started moving and ran to the schools. Our children were screaming. They wanted to get away. When we woke up, we found everything behind us destroyed. There's nothing left. And many Israelis, too, are living in fear. Just north of Gaza, the city of Ashkelon has been hit repeatedly by Hamas rockets. It has been very stressful, but we are following the government's instructions. We have faith in the army and our creator. Gaza is not Israel's only front in an intensifying conflict. On the West Bank, tensions hit new highs as Palestinians exchanged rocks and gunfire with Israeli soldiers. For the first time this week, Palestinians died in numbers on the streets of the territory. The United States has sent a diplomat to try and broker a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. But as flames and fighting spread across the Holy Land, peace seems like a distant prospect.
I'd like to turn now to DW Jerusalem correspondent Tanya Kramer. Tanya, we understand that Israeli forces have conducted air and ground attacks on Gaza. What more can you tell us?
Well, we've seen a military buildup around the Gaza Strip for the past days. But for now, still, the focus of the Israeli army seems to be on concerted strikes from the air, the navy and artillery. We've seen that particularly last night. This was a very massive air bombardment campaign, also by the artillery and from the navy, and especially in the northern Gaza Strip. The army has said they deployed 160 fighter jets and were targeting what they called a tunnel system used by Hamas and the Islamic Jihad. And we have the impression that, I mean, today, again, it was a bit more quieter during the day, but it has picked up. Rocket barrages came in waves, and also the airstrikes have continued. Of course, this comes at an immense devastation for the residents there, especially there also in this northern area of the Gaza Strip. And I talked to someone there on the phone today. I said they're hunkering down there at home, but that many of the neighbors have left, as we've seen in the report, to look for a kind of safer place, which doesn't really exist in Gaza.
What is the situation, Tanya, in occupied West Bank?
Well, we've seen today across the occupied West Bank protests and demonstrations by mainly by young Palestinians. There's a lot of anger and frustration. Some came out in solidarity. What happened? What is happening in Gaza? So some of the youth there were throwing Molotov cocktails, stones, and other objects. And the Israeli army responded with tear gas, rubber bullets, and some live ammunition. Now, the Ministry of Health in Ramallah has said that at least nine protesters were killed and several hundreds injured. Now, this comes, of course, a day before Nakba Day, which is a reminder for many Palestinians of their forced displacement in 1948. They're commemorating this on Saturday. And, of course, we also will have funerals tomorrow. So there might be some more protests and demonstrations at that point.
DW correspondent Tanya Kramer reporting earlier from Jerusalem. And there's also growing tension on Israel's northern border with Lebanon. Lebanese state media report a protester was killed while trying to cross the frontier. He was one of a group of protesters who gathered near the border in support of the Palestinian cause. The Israeli army says it fired warning shots when people tried to cross a security fence. The border region has been on edge with Palestinian militants firing rockets into Israel. And moments ago, DW's Razan Salman gave us this update on events at the Lebanese-Israeli border.
There are still tensions at the borders after the Israeli troops shot Lebanese civilian Mohammed Tahan, who died a few hours later due to his injury. The Lebanese armed forces are working hand in hand with the UN peacekeepers troops to evacuate the area near the border to contain the situation. There are information circulating on social media and on Lebanese media outlets that there are three other protesters who have been injured by Israeli shots after they tried to cross what is known to be the blue line, which is a border demarcation that was published by the UN peacekeepers in 2006 after the Lebanese-Israeli war. There are also calls by Lebanese parties and activists for a large protest to take place tomorrow at the Lebanese border, and there are fears of growing escalation.
DW's Razan Salman reporting moments ago. Well, a vigil, meanwhile, against anti-Semitism has been held in Gelsenkirchen in western Germany. Well, earlier this week, demonstrators shouted anti-Jewish slogans outside the city's synagogue. But today, supporters rallied in solidarity with Jewish communities. Police estimate that around 300 people took part. A spokesman for Chancellor Angela Merkel says Germany won't tolerate anti-Semitic protests. After recent anti-Israel demonstrations in a number of cities where Israeli flags were burned and crowds shouted anti-Semitic slogans. So what measures are being taken to safeguard the Jewish communities in Germany? Well, the question DW News put earlier to Felix Klein, the German government commissioner on anti-Semitism.
Well, it's appalling to see that this kind of hatred is expressed towards German Jews and the synagogues here in Germany to make them responsible for acts of the Israeli government. This is not acceptable at all. And of course, the police and security authorities observe very well the situations, also the security measures for the synagogues and Jewish institutions in Germany have been enforced. I hope that any perpetrator who commits anti-Semitic crimes will be charged and will be held responsible for what's being done.
I want to get you caught up now on some of the other stories making the headlines this hour. Concerns are growing in the UK over the spread of the coronavirus variant first detected in India. Officials say it has now reached most regions of Britain. Prime Minister Boris Johnson says lockdown restrictions will still be eased on Monday. As planned, the government is aiming to get more vaccine doses to the worst affected areas. In the U.S., the family of a black man killed by police in Columbus, Ohio, will receive a $10 million settlement from city authorities. Andre Hill was shot dead last December as he emerged from a garage carrying a smartphone. The police officer was discharged from the force, and probes into the shooting are still ongoing. Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives have elected Elise Stefanik to their leadership. The 36-year-old New York Congresswoman is an ardent supporter of Donald Trump. She succeeds Liz Cheney as the third most senior Republican. Cheney was ousted earlier this week after criticizing Trump's continued false claims of election fraud. People of Chile head to the polls this weekend to decide who will create a new constitution. Well, the existing framework dates back decades to the autocratic rule of General Augusto Pinochet. While mass protests have helped spur a referendum that set out the makeup of the assembly. Half of the new delegates have to be women. The draft constitution will be voted on next year.
A few months ago, Ivana Miranda never would have imagined she'd be running for office. Now she's on the campaign trail as a candidate for Chile's constitutional convention. Miranda wants to help write the new constitution because the current one dates back to the Pinochet dictatorship. The new constitution should be written by ordinary citizens because we know the real-life circumstances in Chile. And we know that so far the state doesn't guarantee us the rights we should have. In 2019, after weeks of police violence and riots, the efforts of 1.5 million protesters paid off. Chile's citizens will now draft a new constitution. Miranda hopes to use this chance to bring about change. She's demanding that groundwater be distributed fairly in the dry region of Salamanca, where she lives. Until now, farmers have pumped water from 100 meters below the ground to supply their avocado plantations. How can it be possible that there is enough water for hundreds of acres of avocado monocultures, but not for local communities? In many places, people depend on water financed by taxpayers. But time and again, these pipes are closed off because water is in short supply. I have three children, so it's hard to get by with the water rationed from the pipes. That's why we rely on the city's water truck. It comes by once a week. Another truck is from a private company that the neighborhood residents pay for out of their own pockets. According to Chile's current constitution, water is private property. Miranda shows us a new pipe made by a private water supplier. It was developed for the avocado farmers, not the residents. The current constitution favors agriculture. This pipeline starts at one of the few remaining above-ground springs and was originally intended to provide water to locals. The fact that water is private property has led to dried-up rivers next to lush green avocado plantations. Exporters hoard their water in huge basins and expand their avocado groves every year. The new constitution must finally right the wrongs of capitalism and distribute water fairly, especially during the current drought and climate crisis. 50% of the seats in the constitutional convention are reserved for women. That's why Miranda has high hopes for her campaign. Social activists like me have to push harder to get heard. It's important that we put pressure on the old political elite now. The outcome of the vote will play a key role in shaping Chile's new constitution.
And at the Andalusia rally, Spain's Carlos Sainz put in the fastest time in the auto category in stage two of the competition, while the Spanish veteran completed the 339 kilometers in just over 3 hours and 16 minutes in his Mini Cooper, outpacing Yazid Arraji, who was more than a minute behind. Third on the day was another veteran, Qatari Nasser Al Attiyah, who still retains top spot in the overall standings. And in the motorbikes, another Spaniard, Lorenzo Santolino, was quickest to extend his overall lead. Speed Fiends. Coming up next, business with Janelle Dumalau. Thank you so much for spending this part of your day with us. Have a fantastic weekend, and I'll see you next time.